Hello and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. If you've ever been scrolling through Instagram, you've probably seen the catchphrase, but first, coffee. You know, maybe as a meme or on the sleeve of a coffee cup. Josh Zad trademarked that term, and you'll find it in each one of his popular Alfred Coffee and Kitchen locations. The former real estate developer opened his first Alfred Coffee shop on Melrose Place here in Los Angeles in 2013. He's since expanded to many coffee locations and Alfred tea rooms around Los Angeles, one in Austin, and even a couple internationally. In fact, Alfred has become somewhat of a cult favorite hangout for social media influencers and celebrities like Justin Bieber and Hailey Baldwin, Kendall Jenner, Harry Styles, Selena Gomez, J-Lo, you know, all my friends. Josh is also taking what he's learned with Alfred to launch a new brand of beer called Calidad. It was great to meet him, and I love chatting with him, so I hope you enjoy. And really quick, before we begin, we'd love for you to share Olympic and Bundy with a friend. Personal recommendations are golden. That's definitely how I find out about new podcasts. So telling a friend or coworker about our show would be incredible, and we would greatly appreciate it. Okay, enjoy. So you're from Los Angeles. Are you like a big Dodger fan?
Huge. Bigger big. Lakers fan, but big Dodgers fan too.
Are you going to try and go to any home games?
I'll be there on Saturday.
Really?
Yes.
Are the ticket prices really scary? I haven't even looked.
They're pretty absurd. It's over $1,500 for a decent seat. The
really?
Worst, the worst ticket is about $600. Like the worst.
Six. Lowest. Oh, okay. So like nosebleeds is $600.
Nosebleeds is $600 for something decent. You're in the mid thousands.
I mean, it could be a once in a lifetime kind of thing though. So I could see where like a tried and true fan, that's like a good investment.
Yes.
Right?
And I didn't get a chance to go last year because I was out of the country for the entire span of the Dodgers playing at home in the World Series.
Oh man.
But it ended up being a disaster anyway. So yeah. I'm kind of happy I saved up so I can probably spend double the amount.
Yes.
On this World Series. But
yes, totally. It's so funny. There's last year at this time, here in-house, there was a whole like production plan as far as like if the Dodgers make it in seven games, we'll be live from the stadium on this day and this day, whatever. It's kind of like, you know, contingency plan based on how it goes. And then they even made a plan for the parade like through Los Angeles.
Disaster.
Spent days working on this and, you know, it was a sad moment after that.
This year just going with the flow.
Yeah. So it's like they have that in their back pocket, but yeah, I think they're kind of like, don't want to jinx it, but we have to plan.
Yeah.
So anyways. Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in.
Of course.
First podcast. Whoop, whoop. So you grew up in Beverly Hills, right? That area?
In that area, yeah. West LA and then eventually Beverly Hills. So.
Oh, so you're right at home here.
Pretty close to here, yeah.
This is technically West LA, isn't it?
This is West LA, yeah.
When I first moved here, I thought it was, someone told me it was Brentwood. So for a long time, I thought it was Brentwood. And then I went to actual Brentwood.
Yeah.
And I was like, this isn't Brentwood.
A lot of young people, like, you ask them where they live and they're like, in Brentwood. And I'm like, do you really live in Brentwood though?
Yeah.
Everyone just tries to like, just put like a mile radius all around Brentwood and
yes.
clump it in. But yeah, we're yes. in West LA.
Yeah.
Proudly.
So where'd you go to school? High school?
I went to high school at Buckley in Sherman Oaks.
Oh.
It's a small private school.
Gotcha.
Really tiny, big campus, right over the hill. So I'm a valley boy at heart.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
The 818.
818. Not afraid of it.
No, you shouldn't
be. Love it.
You should rep it. So your family, how many people in your family are in the real estate development?
Everybody. I mean, my uncles and all my cousins, guys and girls. And actually our main real estate office is down the street here on Olympic and Sawtelle. So
right on.
For years, this was my office as well, or my dad's office where I'd visit him all the time. So I'm feeling extra at home right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of good food over there now.
Great food. If you're familiar with the Olympic Collection, right there at the corner.
No.
That big building, the Banquet Center. So that's where it is. But Sawtelle's really boomed in the last few years.
Yeah, it's like impossible to park over there.
Yeah,
it's
I've
like
actually
slammed.
Seen two cycles of Sawtelle booming and then dying out, and now it's booming again even harder. So
really?
It's pretty crazy, yeah.
We just went to a boba tea house over there.
Which one's that?
Shoot, I forget what it's
Volcano.
Called. Volcano?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know that?
I do. I've heard of it.
Yeah. There's a, that whole area has a lot of like cool hidden places, I feel like.
Yeah. It's really
So you pretty much always just, were you assuming you were going to go into that if everyone in your family was doing that? Was it just like
natural? I was always going into real estate. Yeah.
No matter like, you know,
I was never, I mean, I was good at high school, college kind of sucked, business school kind of sucked, but it didn't matter because I had a job lined up in real estate with my family. So it was more about enjoying my experience there socially than really getting a jump off for the rest of my career.
Yeah. So you went to Yale?
I went to Yale for undergrad and UCLA for grad.
Was it hard? Like, why'd you say
so
it sucked?
So hard. I was so good at high school and it was so easy for me. And then within the first week that I was in college, and I mean, I don't know if I actually cried, but I remember it as crying because it was, everyone was so smart. My roommates from anywhere. And like, you know, this guy's playing three instruments next to me. And the other guy is already studying for advanced math classes. Right. And I'm just like, what am I doing here? Because I came from being really pampered and feeling so smart in my school. And I was not so smart.
And it was hard.
I went from an A student to a real B student very quickly. It was really hard.
Is a B student like below average there, do you think?
Well, like I was like B minus, you know. I was like 80, 81, hovering. Yeah.
Hovering that to in that me zone, is great.
Hovering in that zone. I mean, now that I look at it, it's pretty great. But at the time, I had never even seen such a thing on my grades, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
So I shifted really quickly into just being more funny and cool than being studious.
Well, there's something to say about that.
Yeah.
That can get you places, I feel like. So then you go back to LA and you got your MBA, right?
Yes. Got my MBA at UCLA. Growing up in LA, UCLA was where I used to always hang out. I used to have sports camp there. I used to get dropped off on Saturdays. They had an arcade there.
Oh, nice.
And it was like $10 for unlimited arcade for a couple hours and a mini small pizza and a drink at the Cooperage. So it was like the place you went. Grew up watching UCLA basketball, college, obviously. And my whole life I was geared to go to UCLA. And then I got into Yale, so I had to changed my plans really quickly because it was just like this.
Because it was Yale.
I mean, it was just this. Yeah, it happened and there was no way I could give it up, the opportunity. So I came full circle and going to business school at UCLA, felt at home and I fulfilled that.
Gotcha.
That mini dream.
I had the gymnastics coach on the podcast,
Miss
Val. Are you familiar? They've won, I think, 7 national championships, the girls' gymnastics team. And she told me all about Coach Wooden.
Wow, yeah.
Who I didn't know about until
he's
shockingly didn't know about because he's huge.
Yeah, he's the man.
He legendary. He defines
college basketball and so many like life lessons for his players and everybody else.
Yeah, she talked about that. Like he was a big mentor for her.
Yeah.
Like when she started coaching. So when you started in real estate development, was that hard? What were you doing?
I started out doing property management.
Oh, okay.
Which, it was really hard because it's juggling a lot of personalities of people that either don't want to pay rent or upset about their air conditioning, or having a bad day.
Yeah.
Nothing was good.
Yeah.
No phone call was like, hey, you're doing a great job, Josh.
We love this place.
Yeah. The roof is fantastic. You know, let's get another one.
Our water pressure is amazing.
Yeah. Thanks for everything you do. Not one time did I get that call. But big picture, it was a great way for me to learn the inner workings of the real estate business. And from there, I jumped off to doing some development stuff on the design side and physically like in the construction design side. And, you know, it was a matter of starting at square one, really doing the dirty work, you know, like fix this toilet.
Right.
I got to fix this toilet. I got to figure it out, you know. So from there, the responsibilities grew.
But, gotcha. So you started to kind of get a look at design, right? Like kind of how things are built and being put together and like as far as, because a lot of your business now, it seems like, is you're great at designing. So was there any like beginnings of that?
Yeah. There? So lucky for me, the kind of tenants that we had in the area that we worked in and the kind of real estate we did was primarily high-end retail. So commercial properties in a generally in a specific pocket of West Hollywood, on the corner of Melrose and La Cienega, and another little street, Melrose Place. So a lot of these tenants that I would work with would be high-end brands like Theory, Carolina Herrera, Rag & Bone, Lululemon. So really cool brands that I appreciated and I enjoyed, you know, what they did on a brand level, and they were big names. So that kind of made things a little bit easier. It wasn't like mom and pop, you know, smaller liquor stores or, you know, like a laundry.
Right.
Or a cleaners or something. So these are big names, national names or international names. And I got to work with them and kind of, you know, I really always had in the back of my mind the thought of like, how do I work with them, but more like on the level of peers and not just like, you know, deliver the space to them and make sure everything's fine for the next 5 to 10 years.
Right.
And the roof doesn't collapse. You know, like that was the real thing. So.
Yeah. So you're already familiar with Melrose Place then, that area.
Yes. So I actually used to live on Melrose Place. For about 2 years I lived there. And it was a second floor apartment. And prior to me, this woman had lived there for over like 60 years since the middle of World War II or something like that. And she was in her 90s and she moved out and I moved in. So I lived on Melrose Place, and it was really great because it's all businesses around you. So at nighttime, there was no one there.
Yeah,
so if you were
awesome. Loud,
music, people over, there was not a single person to complain because you were insulated by all these. It was the last apartment left on that street. So
Is it still there?
It's actually a store now by the name of The Apartment by the Line. So it's the crazy irony that the store's name is The Apartment, and it is a highly, highly curated home, basically, where everything's for sale. So here's like a $25,000 bathtub. Those are vintage sconces that are...
It's like a high-end IKEA.
It's crazy, yeah. Even like you can buy like toothbrushes and like you know, common objects as well.
Oh.
But it's a stunning apartment that anybody would love to live in or own the things that belong in it. And it's called The Apartment. So it's very crazy. I used to give tours people upstairs, like, remember my old apartment? I'm sorry what it looks like now. And the people in the store are like, here comes Josh again. He's so annoying.
He's back. The old tenant's back.
Yeah, he's so annoying.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Was there any coffee shops in the area when you lived there?
Yes, there were two that I would go to. And they were the only two. So on one side, there's Earth Cafe.
Oh, right.
Which had been around forever. And that was like, you know, the mecca of coffee, food, everything. 24 hours a day, almost, it felt like. And on the other side, it was Sweet Lady Jane, Melrose in Orlando. So they had pretty good coffee, but they had a really, really good sandwich that I used to love in like a walnut bread, and it was like a chicken curry sandwich. It's still unbelievable. It's been a couple years since I've had
it. They still serve it?
They probably do. They probably do. So on one hand, you had Sweet Lady Jane, really mean, grumpy service, like, thanks for coming in, but like, get out. That's like the reputation they built themselves
Welcome
on.
Sweet lady, I'm angry.
Yeah. It's no sweet ladies working there. And then Earth Cafe on the other side, which is a madhouse, of course. So those were the two cafes. And then there's King's Road a little further down, which I used to go to a lot until I opened Alfred, but.
Gotcha. So you're familiar with the area. You have a background in, you know, like retail development. Why coffee?
Well, really a couple things happened. So we had this in one of our buildings, we had a space that was primarily underground. So you came in on the ground floor and then you went, took a couple steps down and it was all underground. And the rents that we wanted, we couldn't get anybody in retail because they're like, why would we pay ground floor rents for underground space?
Right.
And we even tried to lease it as an office, but people would come along for an office and be like, why are we paying so much for an office on the street? Put us on the third floor. We're like, well, there's no third floor. So so we kind of had this little conundrum with leasing it. And I saw it as a really good opportunity to approach the family. And I was like, listen, I want to create something. And I think if I can get a coffee shop on the street where there's so many great retailers, but like really, unless you're spending $1,000, $2,000, you can't enjoy the street. Mm-hmm. And most people don't even know it exists because there's such like out there brands here that not everyone can access. So I said, you know what? Let me open a coffee shop here. It'll drive more traffic for the area and I'll get this design itch off my back. And the reason I settled on coffee was that I figured, hey, you can close by 7 p.m. every day. No liquor license, no IDing, no stress. I can go to bed comfortably by 8 o'clock and like not worry about my business and what's going to happen with it. And me having no food and beverage background, that was really ideal.
Yeah. Oh, I could see that.
Yeah.
In bed by, yeah, close by 7, figure, you know, bed early.
Like the easiest food and beverage play is, I used to always think of it as like, it's a room that makes coffee. So like, what could go wrong?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the simplest type of restaurant you could ever open.
Totally.
And I used to tell my employees that all the time. They get so stressed out. This person, this employee is doing this. I'm like, listen, it's just a room that makes coffee.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. It'll be fine. And it kind of always seemed to calm everybody down. So that was the plan. I said, you know what? I'm going to open a coffee shop. Told my family. And they're like, we'll see you in 6 months when it fails.
Yeah.
But I was willing to take that chance for that 6 months because I really just wanted to do something that helped the business so I'd get their support,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time allowed me to be the sole decision maker. And
this is like 2012, early 2013?
Well, so we opened early 2013, January.
Okay.
But this whole thing started early 2012.
And how old were you at that time?
30.
Young. That's like,
yeah.
I think starting a business is intimidating.
Yeah. I can't imagine having done that 5 years earlier because all of a sudden it's like you just got to make decisions all day long for everybody.
Right.
So there's a level of confidence and there's also a level of like, I don't care because
right.
I can deal with the consequences. So my level of maturity had to definitely be there.
Gotcha. So what are the next steps when you open a coffee business? I mean, because I know that you guys serve Stumptown coffee. So was the next thing like, okay, where are we going to get our beans?
Yeah. So the first question was, where do we get our beans, right? So at the time, you think 6-7 years ago, the biggest name in coffee in LA was Intelligentsia.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Because third wave coffee had just started taking off. I mean, it was still Starbucks coffee bean all day long.
Right.
There was no Blue Bottle. I never heard of it. There was no Verve, La Colombe. These are nobodies at that
right.
time. So the only third wave coffee shop everyone knew about was Intelligentsia, and that's either the Venice or the Silver Lake location where it's like everyone knows those blue tile floors. So day one, I'm like, all right, I have no idea what I'm doing, and I need to come out hard out of the gates. So there's a few things I need to do. Number one, I need Intelligentsia coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So I approach Intelligentsia. They come do like a little scope of work one day to my cafe. They bring two guys and they bring like a brochure. They plop it on the table and they're like, this is what you need. Call us when you're ready to buy coffee. And I was like,
they gave you a brochure.
I was like, what is going on? They're like, the brochure, I guess, contained like the kind of plumbing, electrical, the kind of machines that I could get. But it was literally a 10-minute conversation. And I was so off put by that. And I was like hurt, you know, I'm like, this is the most beautiful street in the world. Don't you know who I am? No, but I just thought they would be like, you know, someone who wants to buy our wholesale coffee. Like, let's show them a level of respect. Like, they're the clients. Let's go. Instead, it was complete opposite.
Yeah. And I mean, just, you know, pivoting in your life and starting this like kind of scary thing and you
yeah.
pick them as the sole provider.
And I thought maybe that's the way things are supposed to be until a friend introduced me to Stumptown. Now, Stumptown is they're based in Portland. And they at the time had a roasting facility, I know for sure, outside of Portland in New York, I think maybe Seattle. But they were opening a roasting facility in downtown LA at the time. So it was the benefit to start opening accounts for wholesale in LA. So they had a lot of people down there that were starting to talk to existing or new coffee shops. So someone put me in contact with Stumptown. And I guess at the time they were known to be very selective in who they worked with in a wholesale capacity. So they came along and it was the complete opposite. It was like, hey, let me hold your hand. And this is what we're going to do. Number one, you're going to buy one of these three machines. You could buy it through us. We'll give you a discount because we work with the factory in Italy. Done. Number two, this is the kind of electrical and plumbing you need. Like, where's your contractor? Let's work on this. Let's get this done. And number three, not only are we going to help you with ordering and how to order coffee, we're also going to help you with hiring. So they told me day one, they said,
wow,
you want great people with great attitudes. You do not want lifelong baristas. They're like, we'll teach them the coffee side of things, but you don't want someone who's been doing this for 20 years.
Interesting. So you want the character over the skill.
They like you want character because you can't teach character. You can teach coffee. So that was like the second thing that really stuck with me. And it was, I'm like, all right, these guys are unbelievable. Yeah. Like, we'll train them to make coffee. Just hire good people. Good people is easy to find, are easy to find. People that make good coffee are probably stuck in their ways or, you know, maybe a little grumpy or like, you know, really into what the craft and then don't really focus on the other side of stuff. So
right.
Sometime was a real blessing. Day one held my hand and really helped nurture the coffee side of things, which gave me a lot of freedom to focus on what I like to do, which is design and experience. So they've always just taken care of that completely for me. And I never really had to worry or stress out about, you know, the quality of our coffee or how we're putting it out there. So
yeah. Wow, that's great of Stumptown.
Unbelievable.
I didn't even realize it. I mean, that they would even go as far as to help you with hiring and all of that. That's pretty cool.
They guided us along every avenue as it related to the coffee.
So when you had this space and you had to decide what to fill it with, was that a natural thing for you?
Well, first I tried to find other people that had good coffee shops and be like, hey, I'm going to lease you the best space ever for a cafe. And they're like, but the street's dead. And I'm like, yeah, but that's because there's no cafe here.
Right.
So there's one cafe that's, they have a location in Santa Monica that I tried to bring along. I tried to bring along another restaurant operator who's in West Hollywood, who does a great job. He's mainly a designer, he's got a Mexican restaurant. And at the time he had a tapas place. And I brought them along and I was like, listen, I'll help build it. You can operate it. Let's make a partnership. They weren't interested. I brought another guy who used to run the front of house for another restaurant. I said, listen, you got chef friends. Let's put this together. Food, coffee, how hard could it be? Not interested. Or he came along a little bit and then just kind of faded out, thank God. And so the last resort was just I had to do it myself. So I had to just figure it out. You know, I said, like, I would go to other cafes and look at, like, their paper cups. And I would look at, like, their plates. And I'm like, where do they get these things from? There's so many questions that I needed answered. And it was just like, how am I going to do this? But I give advice to a lot of people now that are starting similar businesses. And it's like, you're never going to figure it out. You just got to do it. Just do it and then sort out the other details after the fact. But, you know.
Right.
You're going to have a list of 1,000 questions. Just if you have to buy the first round of cups from, you know, Smart and Final, just do it.
Right.
But get this thing going open, because once you open, you're on the hook and then you never let it fail again. So there was a lot of questions I had, but I decided I'm going to open this myself and I'm going to hire a team and I'm going to hire a manager. That didn't really work out well, but at least I had a manager in place for the first month, 2 months that we opened. And one really other important thing for me was, because I had no experience, I'm like, how do I get that PR push day one, right? I can't hire PR because I couldn't afford it and it didn't make sense at the time. So what I did was, all right, I have all these great relationships with these retailers, right? One of them being Rag & Bone, who was really hot at the time, who had opened one of our properties. And I approached the owner and I said, hey, I'm opening a coffee shop. You got to dress my baristas in Rag & Bone. And he's like, best idea. He's, you know, talk to so-and-so. You can go in there tomorrow, take your baristas and get them all dressed. He's like, how many are you? We're like, I don't know, 6 people? Me, 7? Okay, yeah. Fine. So come on in. So we went the next day. I mean, we got, you know, it was a full-on shopping spree, thousands of dollars on Rag & Bone. And we put these little signs at the register that said all barista outfits provided by Rag & Bone with their address. You know, I really like went above and beyond to promote that. And then first press hit we had, this trendy coffee shop in L.A., the baristas serve you in Rag & Bone outfits. And I'm just like, perfect.
Yes.
Because I used their name, the strength of their name. I used the strength of the Stumptown name, which was a little tricky because only really, really big coffee nerds knew about Stumptown. Mm-hmm. But that was great. So I hit them. And I hit, like, you know, trendy people that were into fashion with the Rag & Bone.
Right.
And that was enough to get people inside.
And for people who aren't familiar with Rag & Bone, how would you describe their look?
It's a little, you know, it's a little grittier than like high end, but it's like, it's very denim focused.
Yeah.
Like flannels, denim, you know, it's kind of urban, a little grungier than like a Theory, I would say.
Yeah.
But still very refined at the same time. So
got it.
Rag & Bone. And it's, you know, they had come out in like Rag & Bone jeans at the time were like the biggest deal. And all my employees were like, we got free Rag & Bone jeans. And they felt good. Yeah. People come in, they're like, oh, those Rag & Bone. I mean, you have my baristas talking about like their jeans and like their t-shirts that they're wearing. And it was like this crazy phenomenon. People wanted to work with us because they wanted free clothes.
Yeah. Oh, I could. Yeah. I can imagine that.
Or when they had to leave, they had to give back the clothes and they get so sad. They'd be like, how much can I pay to get it? I'm like, you know, you can just keep it. You're a good guy. You're a good girl.
Yeah. So did you bring in any outside help for the interior design?
No.
It's all you?
Yes.
Because it's amazing. I mean, even down to like the tile flooring and like the colors, it's like rustic, like reclaimed wood with like chic, like brass. I mean, it's all those things together, which I couldn't have even began to like look at all these separate things and put together and make it look good. So was that a kind of, oh, let's put this here, and then slowly you developed those skills?
Yeah, the first one I had no idea what I was doing. I just had the luxury of time because I was trying to drag this thing out from opening because it was making me really nervous. Like all those things that I mentioned. I mean, from the paper cups to like design, of course. So, you know, for 1 week I would have like the fireplace tiled and like subway tile. And then like, you know, it'd be done and I'm like, oh God, subway tile is very trendy. What am I doing? It's not going to withstand the test of time because in 2 years everyone's going to be over subway tile. But it still looks awesome. And it's still there. But, you know, I had the luxury of piecemealing all these little design details on the first one. But of course, as we started picking up, and it's like, you know, you're opening in 4 months, so I had to make these decisions. But one theme that I always try to keep in the cafes is I like for them to all look and feel from day one as though they've been lived in and they're worn in. Mm. I do not want anything too clean and fresh and crisp. Twofold. Number one, a lot of the third wave coffee shops, like I mentioned, Blue Bottle, that do that, it's very coffee focused. Here's a 10-minute pour over that we made you by hand, and the design is very minimalist and like, very like Nordic and very
kind of cold.
Low-key cold. Yeah. I want it to be the anti those third wave coffee shops, right? I don't want to focus on like the craft of coffee first. I mean, we have great coffee, don't get it wrong, but I want you to come in and stay for the experience and design. That's what's going to win people over. So you know, reclaimed hardwood floors, the tile really helps, floral wallpaper, even wallpapering the ceiling. Some of my locations now, I just challenge myself. Not one wall is just a painted wall. There's either brick, there's wallpaper, there's tile, there's something on every surface. And there's not, we didn't just paint anything. It's not like drywall that's painted. So that experience, immediately I feel like you walk in and you're like, okay, this place feels like it's been here forever. And if I hear that, I'm like, it's game over. Because that's what people want in coffee. That yearns back to more like the coffee houses of like the 90s and when people first started
Central
getting familiar.
Perk.
Exactly. When people really started getting familiarized with coffee before it became too much about the details of the coffee itself. And, you know, this is roasted here and this is made using this technique.
Right.
What if you just skip that and it's faster and it tastes just as great, but you get all those other little elements to keep you.
Right. Yeah. And for a lot of people, like let's say if you work from home, that environment can really be like the third place you exist between like home or, you know, if you do work in an office, you know, like people spend a lot of time there on their computer writing or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I love it.
So there's kind of this thing about businesses needing to be Instagram worthy. Like basically the design needs to be like Instagrammable.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Were you like, did you have that in mind early on? Because it seems like in 2012, 2013, Instagram, like I had one, but it wasn't what it is now, of course, you know? So was that on your mind? Social media?
I don't think it was, I was 100% concerned with it.
Yeah.
But it was definitely, I always say like, you know, like God bless Instagram for like the success of Alfred because the timing was very similar. Obviously two very different trajectories.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the curve kind of mimics one another in terms of like the response that we got. So it's, you know, coffee in general is very shareable, right? You could post a picture of your coffee every single day and it's like, it's all good.
Yeah.
If you post a picture of like a martini every day, you're getting in trouble by somebody. It's like, what are you doing? Or something's wrong with you.
Right.
But coffee's, you can always talk about it and no one's like, oh, they're so annoying with their coffee.
Again.
Yeah. No, they're like, damn, that looks great. Mm-hmm. You know, where'd you go this time? So that was one thing that was, we had on our, side and an advantage. But I really tried to make the interiors, not so with the first one because I wasn't so cognizant of like Instagram worthiness and like neon and all that. But by the second and third one, it was definitely building in some moments that people can photograph their coffee with and give me some free publicity when they came in.
Right.
So the more of those I can provide to cater to different people's tastes. Some people like neon, some people just like tiles, some people just like, you know, shrubbery,
right,
whatever they needed to provide on their feed, you know, like, oh, I need to do something a little more earthy. Let me hold my coffee up against a tree.
Yeah.
There you go. So I definitely, it became a part of my design process
yeah.
as we went forward.
So along the way you picked up on it and kind of started implementing
yes.
more of that.
Definitely. I mean, it just became absolutely necessary to compete in a lot of ways. I think there's a huge emphasis on businesses now, like to do that, like that's all they care about.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go in there and you're like, oh, that's the wall, but this place sucks.
Right.
So why would you ever go back? You got your photo.
Yeah.
So you have to hit them with the multi-pronged approach,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I get like a lot of like people that I know or other people like, you know, doctors, they're like, how do I make my practice more Instagram worthy? I'm like, you can't, you're a chiropractor.
But first my face.
Yeah. Like what are you gonna do? Like, put a neon in, but like, you know, you're a chiropractor. Let's mm-hmm. just focus on your craft. It's all good.
Please focus on your craft.
Yeah, exactly. Do it really well. People will come back and share with their families.
Yeah.
It does not have to be good on Instagram. It's just, it's not everything has to be good on Instagram, but for food and beverage now, it's a big consideration.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think it should be balanced with everything else.
Right.
You know?
So how, speaking of Instagram, I remember when I first moved to LA, I was very aware of the signage in all of your stores of But First Coffee. That's
yeah.
obviously a huge thing. And you guys trademarked that, didn't you?
Yes.
So where did you see that like kind of floating around the internets? And like, how soon did that come into play and being, cause it's on all of the walls in the coffee
yeah.
locations.
Yeah.
So how did that come about?
Well, that came about, so the first day we opened, we had that on our wall. And the story, if you want to go back a little bit, so I had this wall in the cafe right above the stairs where it says But First Coffee Now, where I knew I wanted to have some kind of like monument, like signage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to put something in there that would alert people, whether they photograph it or they come in. This is like the mantra that relates back to us. So I had my artist lined up for, I think, like a Friday. And I was trying to come up with things to put up there, you know, and it was like all these silly things. And I think what I settled on last was like, you know, caffeine, sleep, repeat, something like that I made on the computer.
Yeah.
And it sounds terrible now, but like 6 years ago, it was pretty awesome. And like, oh, caffeine, sleep, repeat. Like no one had seen everything 1 million times.
Yeah.
You
that's
know?
Like essentially what I do. But
yeah,
yeah,
exactly. So I was going to put that up there and I had the whole thing mocked up. And a friend of mine who worked in social media was going through the phone and had come across this like But First Coffee in this particular font, in this particular layout on three different lines with the comma and the period after coffee, and showed it to me. And I was like, boom,
yeah.
That's it. So the next day the artist, he's like, what do I put up there? Come on, we got to go. And I'm like, you're going to put But First comma coffee period. And he painted it up there and then it became this thing. And like, it became this bigger thing. And then I started seeing it everywhere and I'm like, you know what? I started it first. I earn it. It's mine. I'm going to take advantage of it. So we trademarked it.
Yeah. And now you're able, I mean, you guys sell like merchandise with it. It's obviously
yeah.
on the sleeves. It's like
we
its
do
own
a
thing.
Lot of
I
fun
feel
stuff
like.
With that. Yeah. So I mean, I used to think earlier on, like the But First Coffee, the motto had legs to become like even, you know, more famous than Alfred itself.
Right.
But I think now it's a matter of working together.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and
you know,
I
relating
wonder,
back to each other.
I wonder if anyone has that as a tattoo.
Probably.
Like just somewhere out there.
I honestly should put it up right now and see.
Yeah.
Anybody got a tattoo? Share it.
I wouldn't doubt
Free
it.
Free gift card.
So also it seems like Alfred, I was reading about Chiara Ferragni. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
So she's an Italian. She's from Italy, like a fashion blogger, kind of an early on one, like big influencer on social media. She posted about Alfred just on her own.
Like six times in 1 week. It was the craziest thing. That was the moment.
Yeah, that's huge.
Huge. It was like, I even remember it was like November. It was like on my birthday, there was one that she put up there and I was like, boom.
Happy birthday to
business.
Me.
We're in business right now.
Yeah. So, and there's obviously been a ton of celebrities, people that have been photographed coming in and out of Alfred, drinking it, like, you know, Justin Bieber, Kendall, my favorite, if you're a Game of Thrones fan, the Lady of Winterfell. What's her real name? Sansa Stark, the redhead?
I don't know.
Redhead?
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about. Anyways, lots of people. Obviously, that's a big deal for your brand to be out there. Does it, can you, are you able to measure, like, how does that correlate to business? And, like, do you see a spike in business after things like that? Or is it kind of a slow climb, just more and more word of mouth, more and more word of mouth?
You know, we get, I'm not so in the, on the cafe level of things.
Yeah.
But we, I see direct relationships. Like, we had Harry Styles come in a few times, and people would come to the cafe for the next several days, weeks, and be like, what did Harry order? I want that. I had some woman send me a letter with a $20 bill. And it was like, next time Harry comes in, please tell her so-and-so buy his drink on him. And I was like, oh.
Have any Lakers players come in?
I'm pretty sure I saw LeBron's son the other day in Brentwood. I know he lives in Brentwood, his younger son.
Oh, yeah.
Lakers players, who have I seen? Blake Griffin comes in all the time. He's obviously not a Lakers player. He's on the Pistons now, formerly on the Clippers.
Maybe Genie?
Maybe. We get a lot of athletes.
So you guys expanded, obviously. You have multiple coffee locations and tea rooms now. I went to the new tea room in Brentwood.
Yeah.
Because those are the closest to here.
Yes.
And it's beautiful.
Thank you.
The tea rooms to me are very, very beautiful.
Yeah.
What was the decision to, instead of like just adding tea to your menu, like, how did you get to the point of, okay, I'm going to open a separate kind of Alfred?
So we go back to real estate here, right?
Uh-huh.
So we had Alfred on Melrose Place, the coffee shop, was such a success, not only the business itself, but for driving other businesses to want to be now on Melrose Place and really developing the street as a legitimate high-end fashion player, right? You have
right.
like Rodeo and you have all these other places, but like Melrose Place was like the address you wanted. So like Isabel Marant, Melrose Place. Like that's like the one store she needed to have in LA. So it was a really big deal. So what we wanted to do was on the real estate side, we had a couple buildings on the other side of the building, on the other side of the street, on the north side, and then west. So we really wanted to start leasing those buildings and making that side of Melrose Place anchored with great tenants. So when we were developing the plan, we had chopped up the buildings into different spaces. So we had probably was considered the worst space because it was horizontal and it had an access from Alfred Street and from this courtyard, like courtyard access. Everyone wants to be on the street, you know?
Right.
So on the plan, we had actually put Alfred, not even coffee, just Alfred. And we went out to market trying to lease to these other players, and we got Frame Denim and Moon Juice and Cotton Citizen. So everyone's like, oh my God, Alfred's opening on the side of the street. Like, we want to be there. All right. Well, they signed the leases, and the question really came back to like, now, okay, so Josh, you're going to open another coffee shop here? And I'm like, all right, I already have one on the same street. I have one a block away on Melrose and La Cienega. That was also like a real estate play kind of. So I can't really open another coffee shop because that's just absurd. But I'm like, I have an idea. What if we did a tea shop? Now, at that time, matcha was doing really well for me in my cafes. We were doing a lot of iced tea, hot tea, and of course, like the world of boba, which we had not really explored.
Right.
But I'm like, all right, what if we can do a fine tea place that also explores matcha? But we do boba. So we don't do it like the syrups and like the rip top open and like, you know, multicolor fake sugar
right.
mess. We did this like from the heart and did it from scratch every day. So that was the concept, Alfred Tea. I didn't know how viable it was going to be because obviously coffee is super hot and continues to be super hot as a business. Tea suffers from an image problem in that most people think, why would I spend $5 for a bag of tea and hot water? That's just what people think of tea.
Right.
So I was like, the challenge for me is going to be getting people in there and experiencing like, wow, the world of tea is so versatile and it's so beautiful. And there's so many great things you can do. That's actually way more dynamic than coffee because coffee is literally all espresso based or drip coffee based. And it's like, there's so many things you could do flavor wise. It's just different amounts of milk and different heat temperatures. Mm-hmm. It's not that dynamic. So we opened the tea room, and the concept was, if I make it cute enough and do the pink tile everywhere and add the plants and add the brass elements, like, people will want to come here, at least take a photo one time, and they're going to order a drink because, like, they need that drink for the photo. But if they go to the register and they realize, like, wow, tea is actually unbelievable and I love it now, that'll keep them coming back more and more and more.
So hooked them.
I hooked them. Again, this was very, very focused on Instagram, for sure.
Got it. And so you have Stumptown for the coffee part of your business. Mm-hmm. Did you have, like, a tea guy?
I wanted to do a tea guy. And there was a tea guy in San Francisco, Samovar Tea, which I thought was great. But tea is this thing where, like, even if you find a great tea place, like Samovar or anybody else, they get their teas from like 30 different vendors because it's not this, it's very, again, very different. So like different companies do very great, like, you know, like flower-based teas that are like no caffeine or like chamomile. You want black teas, they have to come from this region. So people are better at sourcing it.
Sure,
so
yeah.
We have many different vendors that we source from. We do custom blends with them. So I could not narrow it down to a list of one or two.
So you've opened tea rooms in Tokyo.
Yes.
Which, Mr. Starbucks, did you know that Howard Schultz, his first international spot was Tokyo?
I did. I listened to the podcast very recently.
And I
felt very, very, very strongly about some of the things he was talking about.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure you did. I was going to say he...
Again, different scale, but you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I've heard him joke that he picked Tokyo because it was like a direct flight from Seattle or something.
Yes.
Now, I feel like opening a tea room in Japan would be intimidating, like breaking into that market. I don't know if you have plans to open like a coffee shop there, but the tea rooms, like, how was that experience for you? Just like opening an international business.
It's very crazy because of all the places I'd visited in my life, Tokyo was my favorite, right? Japan, primarily Tokyo. So that was always in the back of my mind. I just love it there, right? Put that away. When we had opened the tea room for about 3 or 4 months only, at that point, I was always getting a lot of inquiries about taking the Alfred Coffee business internationally. I think it's natural. You get attention, you get media attention, you get celebrities. A lot of people in different countries want to license it or franchise it. And like, how can we open Alfred? We want to open 100 of them. So that was always great. And I was always like, I don't know about if I'm ready for this. But we had opened the tea room for about 3 or 4 months. And I had two Japanese groups that were like really interested. Like, we want the tea concept. And I'm like, all right, not only is it weird that the concept's open for 3 or 4 months, I feel like Japan is the home of tea, and they want to open a Los Angeles tea shop that's only been open for a few months. I'm like, this is just too like funny to like pass up this conversation.
Right.
Also, I love Tokyo.
So it's only been open for a few months when you were approached about this.
A few months. And I love Tokyo. So I'm like, all right, I get a trip out there, you know?
Yeah.
So made plans to meet with both groups. I'm like, Dad, you want to go to Japan? He's like, great. Let's go to Japan.
I'm in.
We got there. First 3 days with one group. I mean, our feet didn't even touch the ground. So we're like whirlwind running around the, you know, this restaurant's 8 seats and it's never open this night of the week. But here's the chef just for you guys. And here's truffle on everything.
Jiro dreams of sushi everywhere.
Awesome. Yeah. It was like everything was like impossible access. Great few days with one group. Great few days with another group. Same kind of thing. Let's take you to Kyoto. Like, here's the hotel. It's the first day it's ever been open. It's the coolest hotel I've ever been in. Everything was like too good to be true, and I couldn't really like process or explain it. And we ended up making a deal with one of the groups. And we, you know, they said, we want this tea room. We believe in it, and we want to open it in Japan. Now, Japan's much more developed of a market. They're back on tea, right? So it was like they've gone through the coffee wave, but they are primarily a tea first country. Mm-hmm. So we were doing all these PR marketing conversations when we're looking to open there. And they're always like, they have this like East meets West. And I'm like, all right.
Like in the actual language of.
Yeah. Just like they like translating it back and forth. Like, you're going to do this whole marketing push, East meets West. And I'm like, hold on. No. They're like, oh, Josh-san, what's up? And I'm like, it's East meets West meets East. And they're like quiet and they're like, I'm a full circle, you know?
Yeah.
And that's like the whole theme of the tea shop. That's really great. The really great thing about it is is that it's an LA concept, but it's very Japanese and very detailed how we approach these teas, especially like the boba. You know,
yeah.
Like most boba places, even in Japan, are from other areas in Asia. And it's just like, you know, rip open the syrup, this color, mix it with that. Here's the boba pre-made. I mean, we make 15 batches of fresh boba a day. Everything is from scratch. So I think they really appreciated that attention to detail that we had. And the Japanese get obsessed with different places like Brooklyn they love, Portland they had a love affair with, but their number one love is always LA.
Mm.
Los Angeles is like the place, and for good reason.
Got it. It
was a great match. And you said, was it intimidating? But honestly, like, we have such amazing partners there that make everything so simple, and they really simplify it. The language barrier, I mean, it's obviously bananas how different.
Right.
The language, just the cadence and everything and the way you approach these kind of things. But they're incredible partners. They made it as least intimidating as possible and just like focus on like working and building together. So
yeah. And just culturally, I'm sure it's a little bit different. Like, I don't know if you listened to the same thing that I did with Howard Schultz.
Yes.
That I was mentioning.
Absolutely.
Because he was saying how, I don't know if this is still the case in Japan, but people didn't like to take things to go.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't regarded as a good thing to be eating and drinking on the street.
Yeah. They have a huge focus on in the tea rooms there,
mm-hmm.
on like for here service. It's huge. Here in LA, we don't even, it's like 2% of our business.
Right.
And there it's over 50%. So
yeah.
Everyone likes to like stay and enjoy.
Yeah.
It's very crazy, but.
And you opened a coffee, Alfred Coffee in Austin.
Yes.
Right? Why Austin?
I used to live in Dallas. I had roots in Texas. I used to visit Austin a lot. Once upon a time, I used to operate like a food, fashion, photography, music, blog in Dallas, and we used to throw a lot of events in Austin. So always had a soft spot in my heart. And I used to always say, like, if I had to move out of LA today, where would I go? I'd go to Austin. And then my sister was just graduated from UT last year, and she works with us now. So a great opportunity came up inside the Lion Hotel.
Oh, right.
Love those guys. Great operators. They're opening a really cool concept hotel that I think Austin really needed. And we talked about putting an Alfred in there and an Alfred in the Lion Hotel here in Koreatown. So it just made a lot of sense to stay on track with both and
yeah.
bring our brand and really dip our feet into a new market with a captive audience. So obviously a hotel and people that get really emotionally charged and excited. So,
yeah. Did you find that people in Austin were already familiar with your brand because of the internet?
Yes. Especially the people like the hotel travelers and stuff. I mean, they know.
Right.
They're like, oh my God, there's an Alfred in our lobby.
Yeah.
You didn't have to go to LA. This is the craziest thing.
They're across the country?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Internet, people get really excited and they know these brands, you know, and
mm-hmm.
it's a good opportunity for them to experience it.
So as your businesses grow, does it make you nervous that you won't be able to kind of like, I don't know how big you want to grow it, but, you know, knowing how the customer's experience is seems like a big deal. So as your, you know, company gets bigger, is that kind of a concern? Or are you just like, yeah, we'll take it as it comes?
I think the latter. You know, I'm not a huge future person.
Mm.
Like 10-year plan. Oh my God, I'm gonna run away from that question always. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
I always thought about that. And it's for me, I'm like a present or like, you know, a year or two out. So I think that really helps me just kind of not get too carried away. And too bogged down by like, you know, that's my plan. I got to get there. So, you know, I think what we do, we have an amazing team. We really focus on building each location at a time. We've never had like five we had to open at the same time. And like, you know, the stress of that and cutting corners as a result, or like, you know, all the locations are going to look the same, right? If you have to open five in the next 6 months, it's going to be the same chairs, the same tile, the same menu. I mean, it's just going to be like that. But I've had the luxury of like a little bit of spacing, so I can, whatever I feel I want to design something like, I'll
right.
do it. Whatever the neighborhood, like, you know, next door there's so-and-so coffee shop. Well, let's flip it on its head. Let's do an opposite experience over here. So I'm much more nimble and adaptable because we've had that luxury of like taking a little bit of time and really creating unique shops one by one. I think naturally if you get too big, you lose a little bit of that. You know, and they all look kind of the same and they feel the same. But we've game planned for that kind of scenario, obviously, like making like three different style Alfreds, not only based on size, but based on like the neighborhood and like, you know, what, what kind of experiences we want to create. So we have at our disposal like a brand book on like 3-4 different Alfred looks and feels.
Like this is kind of the up and coming neighborhood Alfred.
Yeah.
This is the like more urban
exactly.
Alfred.
Exactly. Oh. Some can be over the top. Some could be like much more minimalist and like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. This is the,
you know, like low key signage, or we're just going to put it in your face. Like they're
right.
The Lion Hotel location. So,
is there a town that you really are like, if it happens one day, I can't wait to open Alfred here?
Yeah, like from a business standpoint, like using my brain, would be, I think like San Francisco would be a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
We not only get like a lot of responses on social media and other ways that like, you know, come to San Francisco. It's still California. Makes me really comfortable there.
Yeah.
But if you're like your heart, I want to open one in Vegas. And I just,
yeah.
I think it'd be just so fun to like have it like the Wynn Hotel, like just something crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and like.
That reminds me, I don't know if you know the people who own Egg Slut, but
yeah.
They opened one, I think, in Cosmopolitan in Vegas, and I just happened to be in Vegas, and I was like, there's an Egg Slut here?
It's just, I think like a sole location, like a brand play,
mm-hmm.
Really make it over the top, and no, you know, waning need for coffee. So I think it would be pretty fun to do something like that.
Yeah.
So that's like where my new thinking is right now. But I think as a business... for proof of concept, like to another city, I think San Francisco would definitely be the move. You know, coffee-obsessed city. You're still in California.
Right.
Still close enough where we can tend to it, like, you know, an hour away, as opposed to, like, see you later.
Right.
You're so far.
You could take Elon's
exactly.
tunnel there.
Yeah.
Get there in 30 minutes.
Exactly.
So I'm very curious about Calidad beer, because I was reading somewhere you were talking about how like you maybe at some point were considering making bottled coffee, but the market was kind of crowded. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very simplified version, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That I simplified. Yeah. Those are my words.
Got it. Okay. So like maybe it was in your mind like, oh, maybe we could package something with Alfred and
right
in a different way, I guess. Cause I feel like coffee or beer is kind of like that, right? Like it's kind of like, there's a lot of craft beer now.
Yeah.
So how long were you toying with the idea of developing a separate beer brand, and how are you like, you know, trying to make it its own thing?
Right. So I think, you know, as soon as we opened the first Alfred, there's like the pressure, like, where are you opening next? Or like, are you going to bottle your own drinks, or are you going to, you know, all these things come up since the day I opened, you know, they're just natural conversations, you know, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? We open the tea room and it's like, bottling the tea. So we've had all these conversations, right? I think, again, tea, I think, is a little bit early for the whole like movement right now. I think we're in a great position and we've got a brand name, but this is still a coffee country, 100%. And it continues to be so. So the RTD play would naturally be in the coffee side. But I think what I noticed is even like Stumptown that we work with, like they own the cold brew coffee, flavor wise, brand wise, market share wise. I mean, and they do a really great job. So it's like a little bit late to come into that. And there's a lot of cool things happening on the coffee side and the ready to drink. So I said, you know what? I'm looking at the beer space and there's like all these brands that have been out there, but they're mostly done from the perspective of like the brew side, right? So it's like, you know, we have incredible hazy IPAs and these flavors,
right.
And really for a specific beer drinking audience, and they're not really brand first.
Yeah.
So Alfred is a very brand first company. You know, coffee is probably like 1B and brand is 1A. You know, I don't want to make it 2, but so I said, you know what? No one's doing this in the beer space. So I have a captive audience. I have a proven model of getting people to enjoy the experience of the coffee, and they come back. I want that same like 90-95% customer that's like not there for like the craft of coffee, but I want the people that are not there for the craft of beer. They want brand first, great tasting beer, and you know, like let's work on the brand side of things. So what's really hot right now, and it's continued to be hot, is Mexican beer.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
dominating. You go to a party now, and it's like a year ago, it'd be like you bring a bottle of Tito's. 2 years ago, it'd bring a bottle of tequila. Now it's like bring a 24-pack of Modelo. That's like
right.
the normal thing to do.
What's the cheaper one? Tecate?
Tecate, yeah. not such a fan, but but like, you know, Modelo Pacifico, crushing,
right,
continuing to dominate. So Mexican beer is really hot. From a brand perspective, it's also really cool because you get like two cultures to work with, two languages. It's earthy. It's, you know, we live in California. It is Mexico in a lot of ways. So then it's like, all right, well, I'm not Latin. Like, how can I make this brand play? How can I make it a little more exciting and more more me? So, you know, I'm from LA. I'm from California. So what I decided was I'm going to make a local Mexican beer. And local Mexican beer is going to be a California Mexican style beer. So, you know, very brand first. We came up with the name Calidad, which means quality. So quality beer. Very generic, mm-hmm. but very memorable. It's like, you don't speak Spanish. Now you speak it. You're with your friend. You're like, that means quality.
Something good.
Yeah, you feel good. You're like, I know what that means.
Yeah.
And then we tried to design the packaging to be very approachable and very familiar. So it's like, you feel like you've seen it around. It's not like some, you know, crazy cool logo that you're like, oh, that's the wittiest logo I've ever seen. You're like, all right, this looks very familiar and authentic.
It's funny you're talking about this. I was just at Whole Foods, and my husband always buys IPAs, like obsessed with IPAs. And if you are just like looking for a random IPA, the packaging of these things are insane.
Yeah.
There's like ghouls and like lizards and just like all, it's crazy. It's like all over the place.
It's like, how can I outdo the next person?
Yeah.
It's a lot of that in that space, mm-hmm. you know? And I do think it's like the beer first, and then like, all right, how are we going to knock their socks off with the brand? You know, like my cousin's just going to design this crazy logo and it looks cool, but like it's a little over the top sometimes. So I said, you know what? I'm going to bring this whole brand down to a single color. So it's a marigold-ish color. We call it Acapulco Gold. And it's like on the packaging everywhere. You see it, the branding. It's very reminiscent of California and also Mexico. And the whole concept is that you have a generic name, you have a very familiar logo, but the color stands out. And seeing like that color can across the room or that box and that association, like, okay, that's Calidad. Like, that's color association with a brand is like deep. And I think that's a very lasting feeling, especially for something as familiar as beer. It's
right.
Like, end of the day, it's just a Mexican style beer. It's light. It's refreshing. You could put a lime in it. You could put a lemon in it. You can pour salt in it. You could pour tequila in it. Like, Mexican beer is very versatile in that regard. So it does a lot of the work for you. It's just like a vehicle for like flavor. So I said, you know what? There's definitely a need in that market. I know it's a crazy step because I'm doing the coffee thing and the tea thing. And this is a wholesale business now. I don't get retail experience anymore. I can't control where people see it and how they see it, how the bartender talks about it, how, you know, the grocery store places it. Are they putting it on the right side?
Right.
Like, I mean, I can't be like there every day meticulous with it, but you know, we do our best job.
Showing up
put our
at
best
every
foot forward. Yeah. I mean, I made it so every side looks great. You know, you can't really mess this one up. And this is a very brand first approach to the beer space. And I want to capture, you know, the larger audience of people that just want something that's like makes them feel good, like brand wise. And it hits the flavor notes that they really enjoy in beer.
What style of beer is it? It's lighter, right?
It's lighter. I mean, it's the ABV is in line with Corona, Pacifico, Modelo, 4.5%.
Got it.
It's a lighter beer.
Yeah.
Because
you can't drink. I mean, if you're likes. Like, for example, if you're just hanging out, like, you know, at a backyard, like a day party or tailgating or something, you can't drink like six IPAs.
No.
Like, but something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
yeah.
I'll have a couple.
And the more you drink, the more you spend. It's great.
Yeah.
So you have to have a few of them. But it's very drinkable. I mean, the industry term is sessionable. And you can just like hang out by a pool and drink it and enjoy.
So are you going to have like a tasting room or something? Is that on the horizon?
It's definitely on the horizon, yeah. So like a Calidad Cantina.
Yeah. Yeah.
Casa de Calidad.
Arriba.
We have some things going on here. But I've definitely visualized it and it's going to be very Santa Barbara vibes, you know.
Where's it made?
Santa Barbara.
Oh, nice.
Ta-da.
There you go.
So it's made in California. And there's definitely, that's on the horizon. Because again, I'm obviously a brick and mortar experience guy.
Right.
So the itch is
But it's cool
there.
That you know, like you have some background in beverage and you're just, I don't know. I like when people just kind of go for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because you're not exactly have a background in beer, but try it. You know, you found success in one area, so, you know, why not try it?
Exactly. I mean, you got to try it.
Yeah.
So we created it. I mean, we have a product in a can, and it's insane.
Do you ever speak to, like, business students?
Like one-on-one or like a forum?
Just in a forum. Like kind of, oh, here's Josh. He's owns all these great businesses. Learn from him,
kids. I've done it a few times. I've done mostly like brand kind of forums, not like the business side of things. Mm-hmm. The business side of things has been more like one-on-one.
Gotcha.
But like putting me in touch with someone who needs some advice or like their kid or something. But
I'm just curious if there's any like mistakes you've made along the way that stand out that you tell people like, don't do this. And here's, you know, learn from my experience and don't do this.
I mean, I think number one is like trust your instinct. Mm. I'm not a big listener. That's the thing. So like when I was opening Alfred, like I wouldn't go to other coffee shops and like see what they're doing. Cause I just either get jealous or just get frustrated. Like, how do they do this?
Yeah.
So I like really keep to myself. And, my dad had a few friends whose kids had like coffee shops or restaurants. And he's like, you know, talk to so-and-so, get their advice. And I'm like, damn it, I don't want to talk to them. But he's like, every day, he's like, did you talk to them? And I'm like, all right. So, you know, I spoke to a couple of them and they give me advice, but they have very different angles on everything and their approaches that they have. So it's nice to hear it from them, but I'm not really listening because I just got to, you know, it's not my personality and I get overwhelmed and I'm just like, I just got to put my head down and figure it out, you know?
Right.
But I think a lot of it, you're always going to hear a lot of different opinions from different people. The more you ask and the more you get confused. And, you know, sometimes instead of just figuring it out, you're just going to be like, ask a few people and then you get more confused.
Mm.
So for me, it's always about just like, you know, I'm at a point now where my gut is like, I think I know what I'm doing. I've done it a few times and it's not a wrong decision immediately. It might be a wrong decision later, but just to trust that decision at the time as being the right decision. And inevitably, there's always mistakes that you're going to make and you have to adjust accordingly. So you're not going to solve everything from day one, you know,
right.
Even with this beer company, it's like, I don't know everything that I'm doing, if it's going to work out great, if I have the right distributor, if I have the right brewer. I mean, I can ask questions all day long, but I mean, I'm like plugging in the holes. We're going to do this and we have a product and we're going to go to market and then we'll solve things backwards if we have to, you know, but I'm just going to trust my instinct and do a little bit of research, but I got to get this thing made and out there. That's the most critical thing.
Right.
I can't spend a year finding the perfect partners and finding the perfect retailers and, you know, finding the perfect hires. Let me just plug these holes and move along because we got to go. We got to get this thing out there and get it to the point where, you know, it's moving.
Yeah.
You know?
That's essentially, it sounds like what you did with Alfred.
Same thing.
Yeah.
But faster now because
because
you know I've done it before and it's like the fears are not as crazy, the anxieties are not as crazy because you know it's on one hand I'm a lot busier, so it's like I have to make decisions a little faster and I can't like dwell on things, but you know it's all a matter of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I'm not a food and beverage guy. I didn't study it. I studied the complete opposite of it. Everyone in my family is, no one's been involved in it. They're always like very fearful of it. But, you know, now I'm like the restaurant guy in the family. And it's like, I'm get asked all these questions and I'm just like, I don't really have all the perfect answers. But my number one advice is always just like, put your head down. And if you're going to launch something, just launch it.
Just do it.
Stop changing your mind or packaging. You're going to change everything anyways. You know, you're not going to have all the answers from day one.
Yeah, that's great advice.
But put the pressure on yourself by being out there and like
make
some money and like sell.
Yeah.
Listen to people, actual people instead of your friends at home.
Totally. I definitely understand what you mean about like taking in all this advice and then it's like, then you start second guessing everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, that can be probably pretty overwhelming.
Yeah.
So before I get you out of here, I'm curious, what's like your go-to coffee drink and tea drink? I like the matcha latte, the oat milk matcha latte.
Amazing.
That's like, I feel like matcha is really having, like people are doing all these like interesting things with matcha versus just like drinking it straight.
Yeah.
And it like makes people like it.
Yeah. My wife's addicted to matcha, which is great. Cause when we got married, she was like, you're crazy. You drink too much coffee. What are you doing? You're a psycho. Like, we're on vacation, and it's like, vacation is like when you really know someone's like instincts.
If you need the coffee.
Yeah, like, you know the little ticket you fill out? And I'd be like, you know, 8 a.m. wake up, a large carafe of coffee with cream. Yeah. Like, she's like, what about breakfast? I'm like, I can't eat for like 2 hours, you know? So I hang that on my door, ding dong, 8 a.m., coffee immediately. She's like, you should eat something before, you should have some water, or like have a couple almonds. And I'm like, no, that's me, you know, on vacation. It's raw me. So, so she'd always judge me for having coffee so much and like, or just like, you know, like first thing in the morning, like I need it, that feeling. And then once we got married, I tried to get her on coffee. She was like, I don't really like it. And then matcha. And now first thing when she wakes up,
the world opened up.
She's an iced large almond matcha latte immediately. So now she gets the whole caffeine thing too. So we wake up and it's like, let's walk to Alfred immediately before we do anything else. So.
And do you guys, which one do you live closest to now?
Melrose Place.
Oh, nice.
In the alley. Yeah. I live in West Hollywood. So
the heart.
In the heart of it. So yeah, it's my go-to drink. Depending on hot or cold, either just a cold brew with half and half or a large drip coffee with half and half. And then in the afternoon, it'll either be an almond or oat milk cappuccino, depending on what mood I'm in.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like the nitro cold brew too.
It's great.
It's that one is hard to cut. You know, Starbucks sells out of nitro. They're
it's
not prepared.
The same though. The Stumptown cold brew is like rocket fuel. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, even when you're talking about Stumptown, like, the bottled stuff that they have in store.
That's what I'm saying. It's
literally is rocket fuel.
Yeah. Like if I'm really sleepy and I have like a cold brew in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like in 20 minutes, I'm a lunatic.
Yeah. I feel like I constantly brag about my high caffeine tolerance. Like you, I feel like I need coffee in the morning. I actually used to work for Red Bull in college. So I just over time have always consumed a lot of caffeine. And that's one of those that if I drink at, let's say, like 2 p.m. Yeah. I'm feeling it like in the night for sure.
But don't sleep on tea, though. Some of these teas that we have, like the black teas or some of the greens even, like I'll have a cup and I am so jittery. Mm. Like more so than like two cold brews. It's weird.
Interesting.
I'm not used to tea.
That's kind of like one of those that you wouldn't think about it affecting you that way.
At all.
Yeah.
And it's like very strong and doesn't go away. And it can be really obnoxious, but yeah.
So what else do you have going on the rest of the day?
Oh my God. What am I going to do? Go back to the office, answer some emails. I'm trying to take it easy on emails now. I do this thing, this feature where it doesn't show me how many emails I have. I turn off the feature. So it always shows a zero.
You can do that?
Yes.
Wow.
So you can just like go at your own pace, spend a couple hours in the morning and the afternoon answering emails. You don't have to like constantly be chasing. And then watch the Dodgers.
Oh yeah. What's first pitch? 509 or
509,
something?
509, yeah.
Wow. What do you think is gonna happen? Sweep in four?
Boston's a better team. They're great.
Oh, this is gonna post Sunday night. So wait, the games are Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday.
So I can predict basically.
Yeah.
I can predict the whole series right now.
Yeah.
Dodgers in five.
There you go. Bam. All right. Thank you very much for taking the time to chat about your life and your coffee and your tea and your beer. Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. As we mentioned before, personal recommendations are everything. If you and a coworker talk about your favorite shows and books and podcasts, you know, all the content that's out there now, tell them about Olympic and Bundy. If you're enjoying the show, you could also take a screenshot of you listening to this and make it your Instagram story or post it on your Facebook. And of course, if you haven't already, we'd love for you to rate, review, and subscribe. That's truly the currency of love in the podcast world. Rate, review, and subscribe. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you again for listening.